This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
I'm sure many of you have heard the name Marshall McLuhan, and those of you that went to college, particularly if you studied anything to do with the media or communication, have probably studied McLuhan in college, but it's might have been a while since you've thought about Marshall McLuhan, who he was and what he did. So recently, there was an article in the Free Press where they launched this new series of prophets, where they went back and looked at people that have predicted things that have come true. And needless to say, Marshall McLuhan was on the money with a multitude of predictions describing 21st century society. And I've always been interested in McLuhan and his work. But this article caused me to go down a YouTube rabbit hole that really caused me to be in awe of how prophetic he was about so many different aspects of society today, even though he's been dead for decades. Here is McLuhan, for instance, on surveillance.
The investigations now of the CIA and the FBI and even our own, God forbid, RCMP, has this anything to do with the electronic
age?
Well,
yes, because we now have the means to keep everybody under surveillance. No matter what part of the world they're in, we can put them under surveillance. It has become one of the main occupations of mankind, just watching other people and keeping a record of their goings on.
And invading privacy.
Invading privacy, in fact, just ignoring it. Everybody has become porous. They got the light and the messages go right through us. As, by the way, at this moment,
right,
we are on the air, and we do not have any physical body. When you're on the telephone or on radio or on TV, you don't have a physical body. You're just an image on the air. When you don't have a physical body, you're a discarnate being. You have a very different relation to the world around you. And this, I think, has been one of the big effects of the electric age. It has deprived people, really, of their private identity.
So that's what this is doing to me?
Yes. Everybody tends to merge his identity with other people at the speed of light. It's called being mass man. By the way, one of the big marks of the loss of identity is nostalgia. And so revivals on all hands in every phase of life today. Revivals of clothing, of dances, of music, of shows, of everything. We live by the revival. It tells us who we are or were.
And obviously, you know, I am such a fan of Woody Allen that I've always regarded my favorite Marshall McLuhan moment as being that moment in Annie Hall where Woody Allen is in line at the movie theater and he's listening to some overeducated academic go on and on and on about McLuhan until Woody has to take matters into his own hands.
The influence of television. Now, Marshall McLuhan deals with it in terms of it being a high intensity, you understand, a hot medium.
What I wouldn't give for a large sock with horse manure in it. What do you do when you get stuck on a movie line with a guy like this behind you?
Wait a minute, why can't I give my opinion? It's a free country.
He can give you. Do you have to give it so loud? I mean, aren't you ashamed to pontificate like that? And the funny part of it is, Marshall McLuhan, you don't know anything about Marshall McLuhan's work.
Really? I happen to teach a class at Columbia called TV, Media, and Culture. So I think that my insights into Mr. McLuhan, well, have a great deal of validity.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Well, that's funny, because I happen to have Mr. McLuhan right here. So yeah, just let me come over here a second.
Oh, I heard what you were saying. You know nothing of my work. You mean my whole fallacy is wrong. How you ever got to teach a course in anything is totally amazing.
Boy, if life were only like this.
That moment, by the way, is not only a classic moment from Annie Hall, where McLuhan really did play himself, but it's been satirized many times. By far, my favorite moment is when Family Guy uses that same philosophy when Peter Griffin befriends Jesus, and Jesus doesn't necessarily agree with George W. Bush's take on his work.
Say, listen, Jesus, I know you're trying to keep a low profile, but there's one person I really want you to meet.
Oh, yeah? Who's that?
The American people may have turned against the war, but I answer to a higher power. I answer to the power of Jesus Christ.
Oh, well, that's funny, because I happen to have Jesus Christ right here.
I heard what you were saying. You know nothing of my work. How you ever got to be president of anything is totally amazing.
Boy, wouldn't it be great if life were like this?
So, who was Marshall McLuhan and why is his work still relevant? Well, we have tracked down Andrew McLuhan, who is the grandson of Marshall McLuhan and the director of the McLuhan Institute. Andrew, good morning. Thanks so much for getting up early and joining me on the radio.
Oh, you're very welcome. Good morning, Frank, and everybody out there in Radioland.
Thank you. Good morning to you. So give us the Reader's Digest version, Andrew. Who was your grandfather, Marshall McLuhan? Why is he still relevant today? Why are people still studying him and talking about him and writing about him today?
Sure. Well, you know, for me, he was my grandfather. He unfortunately died when I was very young, just a couple of years old. But he was an English teacher from the University of Toronto who managed to become a household name in the 1960s and enjoyed a brief period of fame there for his studies in culture and technology and the effects of culture, the effect of technology on people and cultures. And yeah, you know, I love that Annie Hall moment as well. And not just Family Guy, but The Sopranos and even The West Wing pulled out Marshall McLuhan and had a little fun with that scene as well. It's a favorite of mine.
Yeah, it certainly is. So one of the phrases that he's become so associated with, and it's become repeated so often over the last six decades that it almost has become a cliche, and I'm hoping that you can explain what it means, is the medium is the message. What did your grandfather mean when he coined that term, the medium is the message?
Sure. Well, you know, he actually originally said it in 1958.
Wow.
And a lot of people think it was an understanding media in 1964, but it was several years earlier in 1958. And kind of an interesting side note is in the fall of 1957, the satellite Sputnik was launched. And at that time, Marshall commented that at that moment, ecological thinking became inevitable as we stepped outside the Earth and got an outside picture of it for the first time. And 6 months later, he said, the medium is the message, which is kind of an ecological statement. And, you know, the great thing about the Internet is that it brings all kinds of things back to us. For example, Marshall McLuhan. And as you discovered on YouTube, there's so many clips out there of him talking about everything from the medium is the message to the global village and beyond. And the interesting thing to me is watching him and how he uses that phrase. And generally, what he means is not that content doesn't matter. I mean, he was an English teacher. He loved content. But when it comes to the effect of technologies on people, the major effects have less to do with the content than with the effect of the form. So how something like international telephone or television or the Internet changes who we are, how we identify, and how our world operates. And that happens on the level of the structure of the form more than on the level of the content.
What do you do at the McLuhan Institute?
Well, I began the McLuhan Institute half a dozen years ago because it didn't exist. There was nothing really in place to continue my grandfather's work, and my father had kept going behind the scenes all these years, but after he passed, there was really nothing. So having developed an interest kind of later in life, I decided I'd see if I could get something going to keep the tradition alive.
And what do you do to keep the tradition alive, for instance?
Yeah, well, up here in Canada, near Toronto in the country, I have a big collection of books and artifacts and things from the 1930s right up through the 60s and beyond. And I try to maintain our family archive, all the things that my grandfather and father wrote over the years, and collect, I have a stack of reel-to-reels that I've digitized and put on the McLuhan Institute's YouTube page. And my main interest is actually less in the historic, but how Marshall and my father, Eric McLuhan, studied technology and the tools that they developed to do so and how we can use them today. That, I think, is what we really need.
One of the things, and we're talking with Andrew McLuhan. If you want to learn more about his work, you could check out the website for the McLuhan Institute at the McLuhan, McLuhan Institute.com. One of the things that he's also been associated with, and you heard that theater goer in Annie Hall reference this, is that certain media, television, radio, films, are hot and some are cold. What does that mean? What's a hot medium and what's a cold medium?
Sure. Marshall, again, he studied the nature and the effects of technology. And so hot and cool, cold are relative terms to talk about. All right. So this is something that the guy in the lineup actually got kind of right. He said that, he's talking about television as a high intensity medium. And so this idea of high definition or low definition has to do with the actual technical makeup of a technology. For example, a photograph, a picture, has a lot of visual information. It's very high information, so that us on the user side have very little that we have to do to complete the image or the process to understand or make sense of it. It's basically all given to us there. We just have to look and absorb it. Opposed to, say, a comic, a comic strip, like a Family Circle or The Family Guy. A comic in the newspapers, for example, gives you a very small amount of information, very spare lines, and a lot happens between the frames that you as the user kind of fill in order to make sense. So the principle goes that the more information that you're given, the less participation on your side. And on the other hand, the least information that you're given, like here on the telephone, the more that you have to fill in to kind of complete the picture.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
And one of the things that we've seen over the years is how what used to be very distinct forms of media have kind of become blurred. The differences between television and film, for instance, the differences between television and radio, you see a lot of interaction in a lot of these different things. Given that, has that idea of cold media versus hot media, has that changed at all in your view?
I don't know if it's changed so much, but of course, every time a new technology comes around, it affects not only you and I, but the existing technologies. one of the things that all technologies tend to do, new technologies, is they absorb the old technologies as their content. And doing that kind of changes them. So, you know, film, for example, took plays as their content, but in a different way. Same with television. Television kind of took plays again, but film, and changed it a bit. And now with streaming services have taken television and film, but they've changed them again so that, you know, instead of having to wait for an episode a week, we can watch them all at once. And films don't have to be an hour and a half anymore. They can be 10 hours broken into parts. Mm-hmm. You know, podcasts are kind of radio, but, you know, I don't have to join in at 3:30 in the morning. I can listen to it in my own time.
And so one of the things that that we had heard is that in hot media, certain personalities were likely to do well. That's why some people would do well on radio, but when they would try to make that transition to television, they wouldn't be able to make that transition because them being a hot personality or a cold personality, depending on the situation, wouldn't translate well to that new media. Given what you just described, that you can enjoy a podcast whenever you want to listen to it, that a television show may be simulcast on radio, and given what streaming has done to movies, and you can watch something in the comfort of your own home as if it was a television show, even if it's a first-run movie, does that change, in your judgment, Andrew, who becomes successful as media personalities these days? Meaning, what characteristics one needs to have in order to be successful?
Sure. Well, you know, if you want to think of it in environmental terms, you know, certain environments are more congenial to certain characters, certain animals, right? And when you've got an environment that's very full of information, somebody who's really loud and boisterous and colorful as a character seems to do very well on it versus somebody who's maybe a lot more conservative. You know, Marshall McLuhan commented on this during the Nixon and Kennedy debates back in the day, which was interesting because he polled people who had watched the television debate versus people who had listened to the radio debate. And he found that they, even though the content was the same, you know, it was the same debate, that these people had very, very different opinions on who won the debate or who carried themselves well. And it turned out that, you know, Nixon wasn't great on television, but sounded a lot better mm-hmm. on radio.
Andrew, we talked about, I began the conversation by talking about how prophetic a lot of Marshall's statements about the media have turned out to be. And the more technology has advanced and become ingrained with our society, the more accurate it looks like he's been. What do you think has been the most accurate of his predictions to date?
Well, you know, he was a word lover, and he liked to turn a phrase like the medium is a message. And he did like to say that I'm very careful to predict only things which have already happened. That's a great way to to stay out of trouble. But the funny thing is he was actually being quite serious about that. And in the clip you played, you notice he's talking in the present tense.
Mm-hmm.
He generally commented on things that were happening in his time. And it sounded very strange and wild to people, but it makes sense to us now, and we can say, hey, he's right, I see that all around me today. The somewhat unsettling thing for me is that that was more than 50 years ago when he was talking about his present, and to us today it sounds like he was talking about our present. And that keeps me up at night a little bit because what are we, if we're seeing today what he was talking about then as his present, then what's happening today that we're not seeing? And that can be a little unsettling. But, you know, I think the work that he did endures because he talked about the nature and effects of technology as a category. And as long as we continue to innovate and create new technologies, we'll need ways for exploring their nature and thinking about their effects. And that's timeless.
Is there anything that he predicted which, through the prism of 2020 hindsight, we can see has not come to fruition? Is there anything that he warned about or said was coming down the pike which he was off base about?
Oh, I think he missed the mark quite a few times. And, you know, nobody bats 100.
Sure.
But I think his record does fairly well. You know, a large part of his work was building off the work of others. People like, Buckminster Fuller and Harold Innes and people like that. And there are a few figures in psychology, for example, that whose work he worked off a little bit that have turned out to not have been so great. That's an example there. But I think in the main, he did pretty well.
One of the things that gets a lot of attention now, and people are looking back at Marshall's work with an eye towards this these days, is artificial intelligence. And a lot of people are asking the question, did Marshall McLuhan predict AI and the rise of AI and AI dominance of society? What's your answer to that, Andrew?
Well, he did talk a little bit about AI as it happens in the late 70s. When computers, computers are older than just the 21st century. Computers have been around a long time now, but he did see things like this coming. And in 1964, in Understanding Media, he talked about rapidly we're approaching the final phase of the extensions of man, the extension of consciousness. One of the main ways Marshall looked at technologies was that they extend a part of us, a physical part, like the spoon might extend our cupped hand, or, a part of our senses or our brains, like the computer. And so this rise, this new extension of our own consciousness on a planetary scale could be seen as something like AI or what other people call the singularity, which is kind of like all the computers or AI in the world talking to each other.
Andrew, let me end with this. If people are interested in learning more about Marshall's work and getting a good primer on his philosophy and its place in the world today, what's the best place to start?
A great place is that 1964 work, Understanding Media, but it is a lot of work. And the best thing I can say to you in approaching his work is remember he's an English teacher and a poetry lover, and approach it like poetry. Take it a little bit at a time, think about it, come back to it, reread it, and I think if you work at it, you'll get a lot from it.
I'll leave it there. Andrew, thank you so much for the time this morning. I hope we can talk again.
My pleasure. Take care, Frank.
All right. 800-848-9222 if you want to comment on any portion of my conversation with Andrew McLuhan. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.